20 years ago, Rachel Barton Pine put out a new recording of violin concertos. It was from the time of Mozart and Brahms, but it featured Afro-European and Afro-Caribbean composers. And wow, she had so many teachers and parents asking her, "Where can my kid get some music from Black composers to learn?" Well, her foundation's been researching music by Black composers for the past 15 years, and wow, they've come up with quite a collection. They've just released their first volume of curriculum for beginning violinists, and Rachel will talk about that in this edition of New Classical Tracks, as well as her new recording, Blues Dialogues, which fits in beautifully with this entire new project. This is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Mocker. Enjoy. Rachel, tell me how you initially got interested in this whole idea of music for Black composers and representing diversity in classical music. It's been about 21 years, I think, since you put out that first recording featuring concertos. Yeah, concertos of Black composers. Yeah, wasn't it like 1997?
Wow, I hadn't done the math. My goodness. Yeah, 97, that's right, my album of violin concertos from Afro-European and Afro-Caribbean composers from the time of Mozart and the time of Brahms. And I made that particular set of repertoire because I had been performing some music along these lines earlier than that, just growing up in Chicago with Michael Morgan conducting the Civic Orchestra of Chicago that I was in because he was assistant conductor at Chicago Symphony. And then, of course, all of the music that was being performed by the Chicago Sinfonietta, by the New Black Music Repertory Ensemble, which was the performing arm of our great Center for Black Music Research. So this was just part of our culture in the little microcosm of Chicago. And I naively thought this was part of everyone's daily musical life. And after my album came out, I started getting inundated with requests by students, parents, and teachers saying, "Hey, my kid is in Suzuki Book 6. I really want them to learn a piece by a Black composer. Where can I find one?" And I realized that a lot of the research that was being done was really being done in the academic realm, and there were no materials that were really designed for the populace and for younger children. And I had just decided to start my foundation for the purpose of young artist support to kind of, you know, pay it forward from some of the help that I had received as a young artist with instrument loans and financial assistance. And finally, I realized, well, I've got a foundation and there's this project that needs to happen. And I love music research and music education anyway, so I might as well go for it. So I have to thank all the people from my advisory board who've helped us along the way. And of course, all of our generous donors who've made this all possible.
Wonderful. This is not related to this project, but what was the piece that you and Sylvia recorded together or played together?
Well, that's from Volume 1 of our Music by Black Composers curriculum book, which is coming out the same day as the album.
Oh.
So this is all part of the same sort of umbrella of activities. My foundation has been researching music by Black composers for the last 15 years. We've gathered more than 900 pieces by more than 350 composers spanning from the 1700s to the present from all over the planet. And Volume 1 for violin, which is for beginner through elementary level, is being released, which will be 22 pieces from the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st centuries. Women composers, composers from Africa, Europe, Latin America, Caribbean, and North America. And Sylvia played a 19th century work by a Brazilian woman composer of African descent.
Well, it is related to this project then, so I'm going to start at the beginning. I didn't realize that because
So the disc, I'll just tell you as background. So basically, this CD is a lot of pieces that I've known and loved, performed often over many years. Just because I love the music, not because of the background of the composer, per se. And I've been wanting to make this album, but I timed it this way because I knew that the curriculum volume was about to be released along with our coloring book of Black composers and our timeline poster of Black composers and everything that my foundation has been working on, that this is the moment. So I thought if this disc came out, that would be kind of a good timing in terms of being able to play those pieces on the air and talk about the foundation and so on.
Yeah, so the whole project is coming together and is going to be available. October 19th is the release date. Some of these materials are for educational purposes then?
Yes, exactly. Well, we have a website, musicbyblackcomposers.org, And on our website, we have a directory of living composers, about 150 from all over the world. And you can sort it by gender, by geographic region, by birth year. So if you're, for example, looking for a young woman composer from Europe, you can find her. All Black composers. And we're also in the process of building a database of all of the repertoire with different instrumentations, all the historic periods, where to find the music, where to find recordings, etc. And that, of course, is a resource for professional performers primarily, and the Living Composers Directory, of course, for people who want to find repertoire, but also for commissioning purposes. Our primary thrust has always been pedagogical, and after all these years, we have finally narrowed down 900 pieces into the first 22 that we're releasing in Volume 1 for violin, which is for little kids, for beginners through elementary level. And it's really very, very exciting because in the pages of the book will not only be the 22 pieces with the composer biographies of the 16 composers, but also history articles. There are two articles in Volume 1, one of which is about famous African-Americans who played violin as an avocation, including, for example, Frederick Douglass and Coretta Scott King. So anybody who might think that playing violin is not a Black thing to do, well, obviously that's completely not true. And the other one is about the Black orchestras of the past and present. People don't realize that just like there were the Negro baseball leagues or the women's symphonies of the 19th century, there were also Black American orchestras in the 19th century doing wonderful work. So we're bringing that history back to light to show that classical music is a part of the past of people of African descent and will hopefully inspire them that much more to be part of classical music's future. One other thing that I've noticed working in diversity for all these years is that very often it's hard for kids to see a future for themselves if there are no classical music professionals in their area who look like them. You know, maybe there's not a single Black member of that particular city's professional orchestra or, you know, among others in town. So we have role model profiles in the pages of our books and, you know, just showing different professions. If you grow up playing the violin, you could become a soloist or a chamber musician, an orchestra player, a youth orchestra conductor, a Suzuki teacher, a professor, a music administrator, you know, showing children different paths that they might pursue and hopefully inspiring kids, you know, to be part of the next generation of performers and audience members and programmers. And actually, speaking of that, you know, these materials are intended for children of all races and ethnicities because we want to normalize the diversity of repertoire in the life of every musician out there, you know, that you can play the stuff we've been playing all along, Bach, Mozart, Vivaldi, all of those great composers, but that our lives are missing something if we don't also have these other voices.
Let's talk about your new recording, which celebrates a lot of this music, called Blues Dialogues. And, of course, being from Chicago, as you mentioned, it's not unusual that you would be immersed in the blues.
Exactly.
So tell me how this all got started, though, where you decided there's a way for me to kind of mesh the blues with classical music.
Yeah, well, you know, the funny thing is when it comes to the music by composers of African descent, or I should say African and African-descended composers, Black composers worldwide, and even if you limit that to African-American composers as a subset, it's really only one small slice of that music that is derived from jazz and blues. There's so much music that sounds, you know, whether it's atonal or whether it's just, you know, romantic sounding, or, I mean, there's so many different musical languages. There's no one thing that defines Black music. But being a fan of the blues, as you said, growing up to Chicago, just kind of surrounded by the Chicago blues style as what I would call my indigenous music, really, with my parents' old LPs and then, you know, sneaking into clubs as a young music enthusiast. You know, I just was really excited that one day when I was a teenager and I was in the sheet music shop and I found this piece called Blues, Deliver My Soul by David Baker. And here is a composed piece of classical music that was 12-bar blues derived. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've got to learn this thing. And over the years, I've found more. Of course, I found some by white composers as well. But I decided for this purpose to kind of have the set list on the album, you know, just be the black composers, because I thought that would be more cohesive. But yeah, anything that combines the blues and classical is really super fun for me as a Chicagoan, that's for sure.
So that's just kind of a passion of yours? I mean, why you wanted to learn the piece then?
Exactly.
This recording features a lot of works that you were introduced to for the first time. Would you talk about some of those works and what makes them special?
Yeah, it's a wonderful blend of pieces I've lived with for years and years and years and performed very often, as well as a few new discoveries. So the William Grant Still Suite. Yeah, it was one of my big recital pieces. Of course, the Mother and Child movement, which I previously recorded on my Lullabies album. And the Clarence Cameron White Levee Dance, which I actually got to perform with William Warfield singing the Go Down Moses part in the middle. Which was amazing. But then, you know, I had never before encountered Charles Brown's Song Without Words. That's just absolutely haunting, gorgeous piece that I was so happy to come across. You know, DBR, my good friend. I had played others of his pieces, but hadn't messed around with filter until I was thinking of things for this set list. And I thought, you know, that one would really work. And he wrote me a new cadenza. There's actually a commission on the album that it's by a great composer from Los Angeles, Billy Childs, whom I had previously worked with on an unaccompanied suite that he wrote for my Bach Partitas project. I wanted to make sure that he was on this album, but he hadn't written anything for violin and piano, so I asked him to write a piece, and he said that he had been really affected by something that had happened in 2016, the killing of Philando Castile. And he asked if I would be comfortable with a programmatic element to this particular work that he was conceptualizing. And I said that sounded great. You know, the idea of music to shine a light on social justice issues, you know, that's one of the purposes of being a musician. And so he wrote this just amazingly dramatic and moving piece.
Tell me a little bit more about that piece. I mean, you described it as being very dramatic. What else about that piece really moved you when you heard it and played it for the first time?
You know, it's a whole journey. It starts with this very ominous music, and then it becomes gradually more violent, and ultimately you hear the seven gunshots played by the piano. And then a pause and this kind of dirge-like music with, you know, the whimpers of the little girl in the back seat. Music that's very, very sad. And then, you know, a little bit of, you know, anger mixed in. And then ultimately it ends with the same ominous music and sort of unresolved, as though, you know, this is probably going to happen again. And as the composer said, his purpose in listening to this piece is to hopefully just make you think. And, you know, for me, it definitely makes you feel. And, you know, the emotional journey of it is just very, very, very deep.
There is certainly a classic composer on here, Duke Ellington. And the arrangement is by Wendell Logan of In a Sentimental Mood. Talk a little bit about that arrangement in this piece.
Yeah, well, it's really fun because my pianist, who does like his modernistic stuff, Matthew Hagel, my longtime collaborator, you know, he loves to do George Crumb and all of that. So he was very tickled that he got to do a few, you know, prepared piano bits. What Wendell Logan was going for was actually using plucking the strings inside the piano to imitate the sound of a plucked jazz bass. And so that's a really fun element. This piece actually kind of highlights one of the challenges of playing works by Black composers that my foundation is actively working to overcome, which is that it existed only in this handwritten copy that wasn't really playable. There was no separate violin part. The music just wasn't laid out very easily on the page. And actually, in case of this other piece that was in manuscript, the Noel da Costa suite, the handwriting was, you know, not very legible. So we had to put both pieces into the computer in order to be able to fully learn them and finish practicing them and so on. I could tell from the manuscripts that they were worth doing this for. You know, you could get enough of a sense of the music, but we would never have been able to record them effectively had we not put them in the computer. And so, yeah, this is a problem that we often encounter.
Really? I didn't know that.
It was quite the project.
Who was Clarence Cameron White?
Yeah, so he was a virtuoso violinist, one of the greats of his day, and I just think it's, you know, it was circumstances more than anything that prevented his career from, you know, being as prominent as it really ought to have been or would have been if times had been different. He wrote a number of very effective recital pieces, short pieces that blended original music and Negro spirituals. They were recorded by Kreisler and Heifetz. Why weren't they recorded by Clarence Cameron White himself? Well, we all know the reason for that. This was the early 20th century, and he simply wouldn't have been invited to do so by the record companies because this was a Black man playing classical music. It didn't fit into people's preconceived notions of, you know, these delineations. But he also was a prominent music teacher, taught a whole generation of future players, and he was one of the co-founders of the National Association of Negro Musicians, which was an organization that began more than 100 years ago for promoting the music and performance of classical African-American musicians. And of course, all those who are interested in this music are welcome to join. I've belonged for many years, and it's still going strong in A&M, and they do a lot of good work. So Clarence Cameron White is a very important figure in history. Only one of his pieces is currently in print. The one that Fritz Kreisler recorded is in a published sheet music volume of, you know, of Kreisler's stuff. But none of his other music is available for easy purchase, which is so criminal. But luckily, one of his easier pieces is in our Music by Black Composers Volume 1 in our curriculum, and we'll have more of them to come in the future volumes.
Louisiana Blues Strut is by Coleridge Taylor Perkinson, and this is a composer who has coached you in your past, right? What did you learn from him?
Yeah, so he was artistic director of the New Black Music Repertory Ensemble that I mentioned earlier. So he ended his career in Chicago, and I was very honored to have known him. I worked with him on some of his unaccompanied violin music. And, you know, one of the things that you always have to figure out for every composer is kind of the equation between the relationship of the composer's intentions and what actually appears in print on the page. And, you know, I can't ask Beethoven what he really meant, but I can, you know, try to read people's dissertations and things, but I could go right to the source when it came to Perk. And so he talked to me a lot about the rhythmic timing of his works, which are in a very organic way, have a strong influence of jazz. And, you know, two even eighths, as we know in jazz, are supposed to swing a little. And so it was just, you know, a question of kind of getting that right with this through composed music. Really, really fun to get to work with him. And I think his name is so fun because his first name is literally Coleridge-Taylor, which is the last name of a composer of the previous generation, the Victorian-era Afro-British composer Samuel Coleridge Taylor, who was, you know, one of the great composers of the day. And Coleridge Taylor Perkinson's mother admired Samuel Coleridge Taylor and named her son after him, not knowing that he would become a composer himself. But of course, Coleridge Taylor is a bit of a mouthful for a first name, so he always went by Perk for his last name, Perkinson. But I just love all of his music I've ever heard.
There are some fiddle tunes on this recording. Let's see, who's the composer? Noel DaCosta?
Yeah.
A set of dance tunes for solo violin, and they're very fun.
He's an interesting composer to categorize because he was born in Nigeria to parents of Jamaican descent and then spent the mature part of his career in America. So when you Google him, he's sort of equally claimed as an African composer, a Caribbean composer, and an African-American composer. DaCosta is a real discovery. We were lucky to get some of his music in manuscript, and it's something on my wish list for a lot of years because it looked so super cool. I've known about it for many, many years, but now I'm finally going to get to start performing it and sharing it with everyone.
The recording is called Blues Dialogues, and that title also is a work written by Dolores White. Tell me a little bit about her and her piece.
Yeah. You already mentioned Coleridge Taylor Perkinson, and he wrote originally a three-movement unaccompanied suite for violin called Blues Forms. And then he wrote Louisiana Blues Strut, originally intended as a fourth movement, but he ultimately decided that it worked better as a standalone separate piece, kind of a cousin to the original suite. And Dolores White, this composer, who's from Cleveland, she's married to the late Donald White, cellist, who was the first black member of the Cleveland Orchestra. And wonderful composer. She was inspired by Perkinson's composition to write her own three-movement suite for unaccompanied violin. It's also blending jazz and classical, but with a very different voice. She's inspired by Bartok and Stravinsky, and it's really a neat piece. And then when Perk wrote his fourth movement, she decided, well, I'll write a fourth movement. She actually not only wrote a fourth movement, but she made some little changes to the first three movements. So the three-movement version has been recorded by the wonderful violinist Gregory Walker, who's the son of the late composer George Walker, the first African-American composer to win a Pulitzer, who just passed away. But this is the first recording of the new four-movement version, and Dolores White was, for a couple of years, composer-in-residence in Chicago at our local branch, which is actually branch number one of the National Association of Negro Musicians, NANM. Branch number one going strong. And so she was here in Chicago for a period of time. And Chicago Music Association performed a lot of her works. And I got the opportunity to do a black composer recital at NAM and was asked to play something by her. And her blues dialogues had been something I had played around with for many years, and so it was great to get to work with her on it and really find out her intentions. I'm especially pleased that there are a couple of women composers on this album because I think that's so important to make sure that those voices are heard in the mix.
As part of this wonderful project, your daughter, who's 6 years old, Sylvia, is benefiting from these materials. What does that feel like as a mom, knowing that you've created something that's going to benefit your daughter, her generation, and generations to come?
Yeah, well, you know, we've been doing this research for 15 years, but definitely with Sylvia starting to get into the violin at age 2 and 3 and, you know, getting, you know, up and running with it, put that much more sort of fire on my tail to make sure that, you know, I would get the book done in time that she could actually use it at the right age. I mean, these materials have been needed for so long, but and we were right at the home stretch, and I really, you know, kind of threw myself into making sure that we met our deadline. And it's been great to get to actually practice them with a real live child so that it makes sure everything isn't theoretical, but that this, you know, of course, I've consulted with many pedagogues in the editing of the books and the selection of materials and so on and so forth. It's been a whole team effort, but like I said, you know, this is all hypothetical until it's in the hands of a child. And so, you know, I've been really happy this last year to get to practice them with Sylvia. Of course, she's been able to start to use the coloring pages, which has been great from the coloring book. But, you know, our materials are already being adopted. Sphinx's Overture Program, the Curtis Institute with their outreach programs where they send the students of Curtis to teach kids in the inner city. And then in Boston with Project Step, the Dallas Symphony's Young Strings, all of these programs are starting to use our materials. Yeah, all over the place. So we're really excited to spread the word and, you know, hope that students all over will start to, not as a replacement for the normal curriculum and the, you know, the usual famous composers, but as a supplement that you can, you know, utilize at every step along the way so that your repertoire can more fully reflect the human experience. I should also mention that one thing I'm particularly excited about is that despite being only Black composers, our Volume 1 of the violin series is the most diverse collection of, you know, pedagogical music for violin basically in existence. The fact that there are a certain percentage of women composers in the mix, that there's art music from 5 different continents, the fact that the music is from the 18th through 21st centuries. I mean, you just don't see this broad span of things in most of the materials for children. And so above and beyond the one driving element of diversity, which was the Black composers, we have all these other aspects of diversity that I'm hoping that kids will grow up experiencing and having part of their daily lives so that when they become those who are in the audience and those who are choosing programming and those on stage, they'll want to retain that kind of scope of music making, and that this will hopefully help change the world.
And that's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Almacher, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. Mm-hmm.